Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of On the Draw. This podcast is dedicated to all things Hex related. I'm Phoenix Forge, alongside Mythic Fish Mom. How are you doing tonight, Myth?
I'm doing quite all right. How about you?
Not too bad, not too bad. We got some stuff to go over here. Who'd you bring along with you this time?
Well, we got the very Spanish, the very Comet Strikey, Captain Comet Strike himself, Indormy.
Hello, guys. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, so we've got a couple of things to go over this week. Later on, we're going to be getting into the set 2 spoilers that have come out, just to refresh everybody's getting ready to do some brewing with those cards. And we're also going to talk about the new tournament that we're all excited about, the Hextex Open. But first off, we're going to go into discussing the charity stream that took place last weekend. It was a big success. The guys did a great job. Corey was there. Colin was there. And it went really well. I know Mythic and Indormy both took part in that. How did you guys enjoy doing that turn, that charity stream?
Oh, it was definitely fun to do. I know, like, basically just talking about what you do for the community and such. So it wasn't anything really, like, special for us to be part of, but it was definitely a special event in general. The amount of money there is tremendous. We got some cool information, some nice spoilers out of it, too, which is always a plus. But I think the real story was the amount of money they raised for this great cause.
Yeah, they got a lot of money. It was actually quite a bit. What did you do with the event, Indo?
I just talked a little bit about the Hextex, and I did a little contest for the viewers, which was really, in the end, seems to be really, really easy, as many people managed to complete the 10 questions in like 10 minutes, when I expected them to take a little bit more. I guess Google OP. But oh well. I hope at least someone had fun with it.
Yeah, Google's a strong beast. That's tricky to do trivia things, because literally anybody has access from anywhere because they have phones and everything. But once again, a special thank you to Cyrus and Infamous Neo, who put on the event. They both did an incredible job. And thank you to Corey for showing up, because obviously everybody loves Corey. Damn passionate dude. And it's good to see him on stream as well. They raised a total of $12,500. You know, and obviously a special thanks goes out to Colin for that, because he donated a significant chunk of that money. But it was good to see the community come out in droves and donate what they could and sit there and have a good time. So it was interesting. And on that note, I'd also like to talk about my Saturday morning when I woke up and joined the charity stream. I woke up, got on here, you know, said hi. Cyrus is like, oh, hey, blah, blah, blah. And then he goes into this rant about, like, how many cans of energy drink he had lying around. The dude looked like he was about to fall over because he was so exhausted. And he had, like, 7 empty bottles of Monster. My body would shut down after drinking that many of that stuff. That's like battery acid. But it was cool. You know, he did a good job. He powered through it. Got his strength back because Infamous gave him a little time to get recuperated. But once again, a special thank you to everybody that participated in that and everybody who viewed it, everybody who donated. There's going to be more of those coming up, so I think we're all excited to see that happen.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, Neo and Cyrus did a tremendous job running it. Like, I can't think of how I would even be able to stay up for 24 hours, let alone 48, so props to them on that one, because I fall asleep after 4 hours of streaming, so I mean, 48 of it is tremendous.
All right, and with that, we're going to go and talk about the new tournament that we have starting, not this coming Saturday, but the following. It's the Hextex Open. I think everybody's excited for that. Mythic, Indormy, what are the details of this? What can people expect from this kind of event?
Well, the Hextex Open is the first tournament sponsored by the Hextex. And we are running it through Challenge. There's a little bit of a difference that only being running through Challenge, as we ask for the people to submit the deck list through our email, hextex@gmail.com, prior to the event, so we can guarantee that we can play with reserves. Due to this condition, we expect less people to join than all other tournaments. But hopefully it's still a fun experience for everyone, especially as it's free to join with prize support. And hopefully it's a good tournament to end the set one, as we probably are going to get set two soon after the tournament ends, especially with all the Gen Con spoilers that are going to go on the same week. To be a little bit more specific about the tournament, it's going to be a Swiss tournament and then a single elimination on with the top 8 from the Swiss. The price is going to vary depending on the amount of people we get. We expect to have like 5 to 6 rounds, maybe 7 if a lot of people join in the last time in the last moment. But you can expect around 100 booster packs of prize. Also, we are going to have a no tolerance policy with people that don't show. They are really, really annoying for tiebreakers later. If you get matched to a no show and on round 2, it could really screw your tiebreaker. So we are just going to draw any no shows after round 1. In addition to this, we have a special rule, that is that you can call a judge at any point during the round. And ask if you see anything suspicious during the match, and ask for a deck chest for your opponent. For example, if you see your opponent playing Total Meltdown on the main deck, you can ask the judge, is this guy really playing Total Meltdown on the main deck? And we will tell you if it's yes or not and proceed. And if it happens to not be in his 75, he will be completely dropped out of the tournament and potentially banned from future events. If it's just a sideboard mistake, will incur a game loss and a warning, with the second one also being a tournament drop. So I think that's basically, there's a couple more rules and regulations that we'll potentially polish out before the tournament, as when the bans are announced. It should be at least 2 days prior to the tournament, but depending on how CryptoStoic puts the patch, it may be pushed a little bit forward or backward. So we really don't know when the patch are getting done and what can be broken for the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, like right now, if it were to if the tournament were to be like this weekend, right now, Relentless Crush would be banned because it's obviously very broken. I know someone asked me about that on Reddit. So stuff like that is really what we're kind of looking to like potentially ban. Something that just ruin the play experience for everybody else. What's really cool about the us having the decklist is now we know for a fact if someone changes the decklist between rounds. We also know, like, again, if they have something in their deck that's not supposed to be there, and if you catch on it, obviously, then you can tell us. So that's really cool that we have that. Also, the ability to have reserves in a tournament makes it just feel way more legit, despite probably being a very small tournament with, right now we have like 30 people signed up for it currently. So it's going to be a small tournament, but it's going to feel a little bit more legit for the fact that you can use your reserves, you can shore up your bad matchups, so you don't have to make your main deck so suited for the entire field that you kind of have to deal with other tournaments right now. I feel like it's going to be a really cool experience for everybody. I'm kind of sad I can't play in it, honestly. I would like to play it myself, but I can't.
Yeah, I was actually looking forward to hopefully playing in something like this as well, but just to be fair to everyone who joins, there will be no Hextex actually playing in it, so there's no shenanigans going on. And I'm looking at the list right now. We have 34 people currently signed up, and there's some decent names in here. I mean, we're looking at Funny Fat Guy, Meet the Future, Warzog, Isengard's in there. We've got G Prime and Peace Tinker. I mean, there's some big names, so it's gonna be really competitive, and I think it's gonna be interesting to see how sideboarding influences the top 8 of this kind of tournament. I think without the reserves, there's more of a chance of, I don't want to say somebody lucking out, because that's just not fair to the people, but I think it's going to be more consistent, better skilled players getting to the X-1, X-2 record with sideboarding involved. And I think it's going to be a little bit more about the total game plan and the total, you know, meta of what the people are thinking about when they build their decks, as opposed to building against one or two types of decks that, you know, you're battling main board or main deck versus main deck, and you don't really have to worry about anything else. It's pretty much looking for the consistent win versus, you know, specific decks that you're trying to target. So I think that's going to be a big change to the tournament, and I think it's going to help out. I people have been asking for it, so we're trying to do what you guys want. I don't think we missed anything else on the rules.
One thing to note is that we do notice that it is taking place the same weekend as Gen Con and Gamescom. We heard a lot of people saying stuff about that as well. The reason we're doing it that weekend, A, it's probably one of the last weekends before Set 1 is no longer like just the only set to play with. So it's the last hurrah for that set. A, B, not everyone can go to these events. So it's something hex related to do for those people who can't get to the events to do the cool hex stuff that you can do at Gen Con and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody can drive 8 hours to get to Gen Con or take a flight or whatever. And on the weekends when I don't have anything else to do, I'm playing Hex. So, you know, it's kind of cool. There's going to be a legit tournament going on with some prize support. And hopefully we'll get a good turnout. 34 at this point, that's not bad. I would expect to see that. I would hope to see it double. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. But it's going to be a good time. Everybody, if you guys want to check that out, you go to Challenge and you look up Hextech Open. And you'll be able to get to the registration page. And with that, I think we're going to go in and talk about some Set 2 spoilers that have already happened. So, Indormy, what do we have going on with that? Actually, Mythic, what do we got going on with the new Set 2s? We're just going to go over them and recap for people just to keep it fresh in your mind.
One more thing about the Hextex Open real fast before we go away from it. We'll also be doing coverage on the Twitch page. It's been a while since we've done anything on Twitch for a little bit. So it's www.hextextv, twitch.tv/hextextv. And we'll be doing the coverage there for you guys too. And again, since we have all the deck lists, we can talk about potential sideboard options, reserve options for players and how they could what could happen in the matchups and stuff like that too. So another really cool thing we're going to be doing with that. But now though, on to set two. The first card we have here was one that was changed, which is a little bit unfortunate, called Born of the Flame, which is a 7-cost 3 rubies threshold basic action that creates 3 random ruby troops and puts them into play. I know Phoenix, you were really excited about the original version of this card, which was I forgot the name of it. What was it?
Heart of Fire.
Heart of Fire, yeah, that one was really sweet. This one, however, a little underwhelming. The 3 random ruby troops could potentially be Savage Raiders, which, not really a huge fan of that potential. could also be Tarrasque, too, so I guess there's that availability as well, but not too exciting.
Yeah, I was a little mad when I first saw this. I saw the artwork, and I was like, wait, we already know about this card, and then I scrolled down, and it was a little disconcerting. I actually think I threw my mouse when I saw the text in the text box. The last one added damage to each one of your burn spells, correct? Yeah, and see, that is exactly what burn needs. I mean, there's Ruby control that you can play, but it's not really a burn deck. It's more of a control. Wait until you have 12, 13 resources, or you burn to the ground somebody in the face for 12 or 13, or, you know, you get a couple of Rage Fires in a row. But, you know, having a burn deck where you draw your opener 7 and you're trying to put together 20 points of damage with those cards, that's what a burn deck's supposed to be, and that's what that card would have done, I think. There's not enough burn cards specifically right now. I mean, obviously Set 2 can bring more, but there's not enough to play it that way. Like, you can't be an aggressive burn deck, if you get my drift. And, you know, a 7 drop in Ruby, not going to happen that often. And like Mythic said, I mean, I don't want 3 baby Yetis. Like, I don't want that. I'm never going to want that. So I'll probably be passing on this card. Indo, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm also a little bit discarded. When other of the set 2 cards was spoiled, one called Scheme, I thought that the burn deck was going to be Ruby Sapphire, and you were going to play a Scheme to multiplicate the amounts of Heart of Fire in your deck. And with, in addition, with all the card draw on Sapphire, will make a better burn deck. But the change is really, really, really sad. I mean, it is still super, super playable on limited, and it's a bomb, and you probably want to first pick it every time, at least a 3-4-1. And the chance of you getting one drops and so on is not that high. You're probably going to get decent creatures, but as for constructed purposes, in a vacuum, I don't see this card being very good. I may be wrong, but I really don't like the change. I believe they did change it because the Heart of Fire was completely overpowered, which I can see it happening. But I mean, it's not my word, it was theirs. But yeah, there might have been a chance it was a little bit too good.
Well, I want to go ahead and say that Mantic is the reason they changed it. I know he goes to their game nights, which I assume means he does some set 2 drafts and stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and say he broke the card before it existed. Because that's what Mantic usually does. So it's a fair assessment.
Yeah, he's done that with, like, other games that
every
he's played
game
with
he plays
them,
with
right?
them, he says told, he breaks it.
Yeah, he said that he breaks it. Yeah, he breaks everything. That's what he does. He's the bull in the China shop.
He's the bull in the TCG.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so the next card we have here is a brand new one that we haven't seen the art for even, called Robotic Rapture. It's a 4-cost double sapphire threshold. It's a basic action, and it reads, put all our artifacts in your graveyard into your hand. To me, I wish it said in play, but that'd be way too good, almost certainly. It'd make some eggs-type combos happening, which I really is just not healthy for the game. But what is cool you can do with it is if you do have a Replicator's Gambit troop out there and they, like, Extinction you or away or whatever, or if, like, you're doing it with your Darkspire Priestess and the 50% chances that they don't kill that you don't kill them, you get all the Priestess back to your hand, replay them all out, sack them again, hope to hit them again for the points of damage. So it's kind of sweet with that aspect. Also, there's probably some cool stuff you could do with, like, you know, maybe some Drew shenanigans potentially, or some, you know, if there's a way to sacrifice artifacts to deal damage to your opponent's face, to return them all to your hand, to play them back out, to deal back to your face again. That could be kind of cool, but right now we don't have much that I see that's really exciting about it. But again, it could be wrong.
Yeah, I agree. I think the card has potential, but right now with only the artifacts we know from set 1, I don't see it being super exciting. I mean, it's fine as a post-extinction play, but again, it goes into your hand, not into play. So you still need all your couple of next turns to redeploy. To be fair, there are dwarves on artifact has a lot of synergies, and they can redeploy quite easily thanks to Technical Genius and similar, but still it's still a blow. So and the thing is that most of the cards that you are going to get back right now are a little bit worthless, as you are going to get the worker bots that are 1/1s for 1 defensive. You really don't want to recast unless you have the Technical Genius, which doesn't come back to your hand. It just gets killed at this dwarf and not an artifact. So, I don't know. I think this card looks or reads better than it actually is right now. Hopefully, in set 2, there are really cool artifacts which we can recycle and get some use of this card. But right now, I don't think it's going to make the or push the dwarves robot archetype to viable.
Yeah, I think with the information that we have in set 2 right now, the card is fine. It doesn't seem overpowered. It doesn't seem weak. And you know, it just seems par for the course. The only thing, the thing that I thought of when I first saw this was the problem with dwarf decks is they don't really have any defense. You don't have a board presence really, because you're literally trying to almost combo your troops into something larger most of the time, and you can't block effectively. You can't use sweepers to get rid of their board if you have to. So the thing I thought of is, you know, you could play, if you know your opponent's on aggro, you can literally play D with Heatwave and bots, and then eventually, you know, slam a Machinist, or Heatwave the board away, slam Machinist and recast all your little bots and do some damage, but even that seems kind of lackluster. You know, this is great to get an Eternal Guardian back in your hand if somehow it dies, something like that, but I don't think this is ever going to be a 4 of in any deck. I think it's going to be, you know, sideboard primarily, and or, you know, a 1 of or a 2 of copy in the deck, but it seems fine. You know, we could get some pretty sweet artifacts. It seems like set 2's kind of featured around dwarves with the new keyword and everything that we don't really have information on. But it seems like they're centered around dwarves a little bit, so hopefully we get some sweet artifacts, because to be honest right now, dwarf techs are a little underpowered. But they're cool. So, you know, room for improvement. We'll see what comes in the next set.
Yeah, in that regard, I think that if we get, for example, one artifact that lets us sacrifice other artifacts to ping your opponent for like two or three, it will be really, really powerful with this card, as you can potentially sacrifice all your worker boss and one cost artifacts. And if you have a technical genius in play, just cast Robotic Rapture, replay them all over again for zero, and throw them to the face again. But that's if that card gets printed, which I don't know. We can hope, but I really love the throwing the stuff at the cards of my opponent. So I always hope for that kind of effects.
Well, to speak on what Phoenix was saying earlier about, you know, maybe playing a War Machinist with this, a Machinist rather, if we get some good resource fixing, you could potentially have something like a Blood Sapphire Ruby deck that has Extinction and Technical Geniuses and War Machinist, so you could just Extinction away your field with a bunch of bots, or use the bots early to chump block, sweep away your opponent's field, play out a Machinist, a Technical Genius in the same turn, and then play the Robotic Rapture, turning all those things to your hand, and then pinging your opponent for a million in the face with a bunch of dead bots that are now at cost zero. Still, that could be a possibility. I think, you know, you have to go for blood for the removal, or else you just kind of sit back and do nothing for the most part. But maybe that could be something we can go with. Or like Indormi was saying, and I said earlier, if we can get some sort of thing that makes you sacrifice artifacts to deal damage to your opponent's face, which is probably too good with this kind of card existing, with a Robotic Rapture, it's probably a little too good to have that.
Eh.
I mean, well, what you just described is basically just a one-shot to your opponent's face with this card, so it seems a little too
good. Well, but it includes this card, a bunch of one-cost artifacts, a technical genius to be able to replay them in play, and then the card that sacrificed the artifact. So it's like a million card combo.
I mean, Mantis so, does, so I mean, why not?
Yeah, I'm not saying it cannot be good, but it's not like it's one A plus B and
we'll
you die.
We'll stick Mantic on this one. We'll have Mantic look at the windows when we'll get back to you on that one. All right, next card though is one I kind of want to be excited about, but I'm really not that excited about. Stone Tusk is a 4-cost double diamond threshold. It's a 5/5 with steadfast, and the downside is whenever you're dealt damage, you sacrifice this troop. I love that it's a 4-cost 5/5. I really do, and I want to love it even more so. The problem is that Gazog straight kills it, Burn straight kills it. Like, everything you could think of that could potentially deal damage to you, the card dies. It's good that it's steadfast, and it's a 5/5 for 4, so you can get out turn 3 with a nice curve with a Howling Brave, if you can get the double diamond threshold in turn 3. But the fact that it dies to just everything in the world is kind of underwhelming. But again, I want so badly for this card to be good.
Yeah, I just think it's not good enough. 4-cost for a 5/5 with a steadfast, it's up above curve, but the downside I think is way too big. I do think that this card could have been pushed to a 3-cost. Maybe not 5/5, but something like 5/4 or something like that.
I don't know. With that downside, I feel like a 5/5 for 3 is still fine, because if you're playing against a Gazog, it just kills you. If your opponent has two troops, they just kill it, so it's like, it doesn't, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's going to feel like it's, if you're playing against an aggressive deck, it feels like a 4-cost removal spell in a way, as you're going to block one of the creatures, usually killing it, but the other creature is going to get through and killing them. So it's kind of a delay removal spell for 4. Which is far from fantastic in Constructed. If it was 3, that kind of trade is more... is way better, but... I don't know. I also feel that this card... probably they don't want to do that on these first two sets, but this card screams to me to be Wild and Diamond with the Elephant. So maybe we'll have seen a 3-costed Diamond and Wild Threshold, and then it's more reasonable. It forces you into two colors. But yeah, I'm not really excited about this card. Unless there's something we are missing in with set 2 and some kind of synergy with this guy, I really don't see it being really good. Especially because it's not destroy the troop, but you have to sacrifice it. So in by some way you could protect it somehow from its own effect. It's, well, you cannot really protect it itself from its own effect. Like, for example, if it was destroyed, you could potentially give it indestructible or something like that, so it doesn't have the downside anymore. Like, the kind of way we cheat with the true downside with Dimit. But as of right now, I don't see a way of cheating with the downside. And it's not that spectacular.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not all impressed with this guy. I like the idea of them going for lower cost cards with a bigger body and then a downside to it. I think that's important because it sets up, you know, strategies where you're just trying to run somebody over early in the game. But I think this guy is just a little too fragile. You know, I could see him maybe as a two of in some control decks as a sideboard option for, like, stopping aggro and stuff. But even then, like, I mean, you got flyers that can get over it and make you sacrifice it. You've got Burn, you've got Gozog, you've got a million other things that just makes this a 5-5 for one turn, and then guess what? It's done. Now, granted, if it stays on the board, it's going to have serious presence, but, you know, it'd be much better if it traded with Soul Cavalry. I would say that would make it a much better card, but since it's just getting slapped around by it, I don't think it really does much. And, you know, the Steadfast is fine. That's kind of what made me believe that it's more of a defensive troop, for bringing it off the sideboard to stop some smaller troops, because you can go ahead and swing in and then you can leave it up and still have the defense of it. I just don't think it's resilient enough to actually make a big impact on the metagame.
I mean, what you said about the sideboard of control, I think that it makes... I mean, it's if we are playing with really slow control decks, I could see it as potentially even 4 off in sideboard against control for the mirror match of control when they don't have enough time on the clock and they just want to go for the beatdowns. So they slam this as their opponent usually, as it's a mirror match, has sideboard most of the removal, and they tend to make the decks slower and bigger. So there's not many chances they can potentially ping them. So you go with a couple of these guys and a couple of other similar guys and try to go for the beatdowns with the transformative sideboard. But that's basically what I can see it right now.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with bringing it in against, like, aggro decks, like you were saying, Phoenix, is that right now, most of the aggro decks are Sapphire-based. Like, you got Sapphire Ruby, Gore Feast. So they just bounce it, and they don't care at all. Like, they just go, oh, that's Q5 have you got there. How's it? That's a 5-cost 5-5. And still has a terrible downside, and I don't care about it at all because you're getting Gore Feasted in the face next turn. So it's while, again, me being someone who's always wanted to play Wild Diamond, I've been playing Wild Diamond since like the beginning of Alpha. I've been trying to make a Wild Diamond aggro deck work. And once I saw this guy, I started salivating. I was like, oh, awesome, you got a 4-cost 5-5. It's pretty sweet. I can get behind that. And I read the downside. I started like to well up a little bit. My face started crying a little bit. I think Indoor and I were arguing about this for like 20 minutes in the chat, in the Skype chat. And I'm like, oh, it's so sweet, it's such a cool card. And he was just throwing me down flights of stairs every time I said something about it. But yeah, so I this card, I really want it to be cool. The art's pretty sweet too. He's a little fat elephant running around with the hammer. I can always get by on that. But he's just not good enough, in my opinion. I think, again, like you said, in the control mirrors, like a Blood Diamond control matchup, maybe they'll probably bring in these, since they don't have many ways to deal points of damage to the phase, aside from, like, you know, an early totem or, you know, stuff like that. Free angels, because, you know, who doesn't like free angels? Those you can get some damage off of, but usually they'll stick around in those kind of matchups, so I can definitely see it coming in there. But other than that, a little underwhelming. Onto a card I know most people think are really sweet. I know I'm in that same boat. It's a card called Stormcloud. It's a 2-cost, 1 sapphire threshold for a 0-2 flight. When you gain a charge, add a storm counter to this troop. Basic action, remove all storm counters from this and sacrifice it. And you get a Stormling put into play for each counter you have. Randomly. The first Stormling is a 2-cost single sapphire threshold 1/1 called Biddy Bolt with flight. It's got sacrifices, deal 2 damage to target exhausted troop. The next one is Splashy, which is 2-cost with a single sapphire threshold flight. Sacrifices, draw cards a 1/1. And the last one is Thunder Prophet's a 2-cost single Sapphire flight with 1-1 as well. Sacrifices exhaust target troop. To me, most of them are underwhelming aside from Splashy. Splashy's obviously insane. If you could choose which one you get, the card would be just insane. It'd be so good if you could just always choose to get the Splashy out of it. The problem is that random is in the text, and me being a person who believes that my luck is probably the worst of anybody I've ever seen in my life, the word random and I never go well together. So I'm going to end up getting the worst one, which would probably be, in my opinion, Thunderpuff, which isn't even that bad, I guess, but I'll get Thunderpuff every time and just be sitting there being mad that the Stormcloud's still smiling while I'm so upset inside.
Yeah, I mean, the Bitty Bolt, I don't know. The one thing I would like to note about this is the interaction between Mirror Knight and Stormcloud. Not only does he get inspired, but then each of the ones of the guys that he spits out each get inspired. So, you know,
that's a fair point. So they do draw cards.
Yeah, I mean, so you're going to draw cards off of it. And I mean, it's fine. I don't think it's crazy. I think that people enjoy cards that create other cards and different effects and, you know, like throwing a little bit of chaos into the game. I think that side of it's pretty cool. I mean, I would love to get Splashy. Like, yeah, if I could choose any of them, Splashy would be getting spit out every single time. Because then you draw a card and sacrifice it, you get the draw off of the Mirror Knight Inspire. Yeah, I mean, that would be awesome. But like you said, it would be Thunderpuffs all day, I think.
Well, actually, sorry about this. Thinking about it, even with Mirror Knight in place, Thunderpuff actually isn't awful, right? You exhaust a troop and draw a card is pretty solid. So forgetting, I completely just blanked on Mirror Knight existing, but with Mirror Knight, it actually makes these cards much better. I mean, the deal to damage to an exhausted troop is the most underwhelming of them, because a lot of times it might not be relevant or whatever, whereas the other two are almost always relevant. But yeah, completely blanked on Mirror Knight for a second there.
So I'm going to be the hater, and I think I really don't like the card.
You're going to be the Stormcloud?
I mean, the first thing that I think people don't realize is that when the troop dies, you don't get anything. You have to remove all the storm counters from this and sacrifice it at basic speed. So if there's a sweeper or there's any removal spell, you don't get anything from this guy. It was an 0-2 for 2. We did nothing.
That's true. You can't even sit there and accumulate storm counters and just wait. That's really unfortunate.
In addition to that, it's one of the cards that if you draw them early game, it's fantastic when you consistently make your resource drops. As you gain charges, and if there's any other way to gain charges, it can be really good. But if you draw it later in the game, like for example, turn 9, you top deck this guy on turn 9, it's really, really underwhelming because you really top deck an 0-2 for 2, which maybe you can get a one of the Stormlings from it before it dies. So I don't think that's any good in there. So you need to draw it early, you need to sacrifice it if preemptively before you see any removal spell, just in case. I mean, if they 1-for-1 you then with a removal spell with this guy, you're usually happy, unless it has like 9 counters or something like that, and then why the hell didn't sacrifice it? But it's kind of weird because you don't want to sacrifice it because you want to keep getting counters, but in a way you also want to sacrifice it because you want to cash in your counters. So I don't know. It feels a little bit clunky to me. I think that the interaction with Mirror Knight that Phoenix said is really nice if you can live the dream. But man, it's an 0-2 for 2.
Real fast though, stay with me on this one. You play Wild Sapphire Ramp so you can get Chlorophyll to also get charges off, so you can sacrifice it for 2 charges immediately and draw a card if you have a Mirror Knight in play. Also, you play Induction Coil and Dwarven Turbine. So that way you can make charges every turn, right? And stay with me on this one. You can also play Wild Root Dancer, so you can also buff him, so you can actually attack.
I lost you in Induction Coil.
I'm just saying, you shouldn't have lost me. I said to stay with me. That's the problem.
I mean, we're probably going to see more of the when you gain a charge at a counter or do something in set 2 mechanics. So there we may see other ways of getting charges, so this effect may improve, or this mechanic maybe better than I think. But with the information we have right now, I don't think you can. It's that good. I mean, yeah, you can do induction call and whatever if you will run the deck about the Stormcloud, but the Stormcloud is not going to win you the game. If you get 20 counters, you have 21 once fires, which may win you the game. But in any other case, I don't think this guy is going to win you the game.
You can play Shrine of Prosperity, right? So you get two charges for every resource you get, which also then works as charge power, obviously. And him getting two charges means if you want to, you can sacrifice them early if you think they're going to have a burn or whatever. Also, if he gets revealed off of a Shrine of Prosperity because of 1-3, so it makes it a little less removal likely, which is pretty solid. And I think that just alone with the... I mean, Shrine of Prosperity is a card we want to play forever. And you just play a bunch of counter magics and, you know, some peaks and stuff, and you can kind of just go with that, getting much to draw off of the off of it, as well as your charge powers, as well as the peaks, as well as, you know, Archmage Renlock, stuff like that. You can kind of do some nutty stuff with, but maybe that's not good enough.
Go ahead, Phoenix.
I was just going to say, the thing that I love about this card is the artwork's awesome. Like, all the artwork's awesome for all of them.
I hadn't said about Shrine of Prosperity, and in that regard, I think you're right. With Shrine of Prosperity, it may be good. The thing is, I don't know how this effect is going to trigger when you gain a charge. With Shrine of Prosperity, it will trigger twice, and it will only trigger once, as you gain the two charges simultaneously. Just in the same way that when you gain health, or when you gain lives in this case. So I'm not sure.
Well, it reads gain a charge. When you look at the resources, it reads gain a charge in two separate lines. So I think it would work the same as like if you get multiple inspired troops off of a Mirror Knights and stuff, and then you have a Incantation of Ascendance in play, you'll then flip it immediately if they have multiple, because it counts as drawing... as separate instances of drawing cards, as just kind of separate instances of getting charges.
Yeah, probably. I'm not 100% sure, as there has been instance when Hex did the unexpected. You're probably right, but I will keep my 1% not 100% sure about this.
Alright. Anything else on that card, or do you want to go on to the next one?
Enough of the cloud. Let's go on.
Alright. He'll still be happy when we come back to him. Next card we got was one spoiled, I believe it was last week, was Cottontail Recruiter. It was spoiled in Corey's blog. It's a 1-cost, 1-wild threshold. It's a 1-1, and it reads, if you would create a Battle Hopper, instead create that many Shinhair Militia instead. Basically turning all of your 0-1s into 1-2s. To me, underwhelming. I would prefer them to turn into Sensei of the Milky Eyes, whatever he's called now. Anything. Well, I mean, that'd be obviously really good. But, I mean, turn into, I don't know, man. If they turn into the Blood Battle Hoppers, I'd probably be happier than this.
Yeah, I was a little bit... I was hoping, I didn't know this card, but I was hoping that in set 2, it was going to be a card with a similar effect, that when you create Battle Hoppers, instead you will create Boom Hoppers, and Boom Hoppers being... Oh, once when they die, they ping your opponent or a troop, and I was expecting some kind of that effect. Instead, we get 1-2s, which is okay. I mean, yeah, I mean it's probably going to be really, really, really good on limited if you get the Shin Her deck, but I don't see it as a playable on constructed, unless there's something spectacular that you can do with the Shinhair Militia that you cannot do with Battle Hoppers.
Well, I think it lends to PvE. If you look at the spoiler he put on the blog there, which maybe we'll throw in the show notes or whatever, it shows a bunch of the equipment there, so maybe it's going to be better for PvE. I do think that honestly, making him in the Shinhair Militia in Constructed is worse, because if this troop dies, you have a bunch of Shinhair Militia, and then like, if you want to have something with the Oath or whatever in there, then your charge power is basically an unoathed battle hopper, which is kind of unfortunate. You'd rather just have an oathed battle hopper and be play Bucktooth Commander, which basically is the same thing if you think about it. It makes all your battle hoppers into 1-2s. So maybe for PvE this is better, but for PvP I feel like you'd still rather just have your good old fashioned turn 1 Rituals of the Spring Litter, turn 2 Run to the Litter, turn 3, charge power plus oath, and I think it's just a better overall turn of plays than turn 1, Spring Looter, turn 2, Cotton Tower Recruiter, and Runts. Just doesn't seem really worth it to me.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that making a... I mean, especially you have a one cost 101, which they have to be really good to see, to usually see playing constructed, and this one doesn't strike me too, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things came to mind when I first saw this, is I was looking at it, I read it, and I really wasn't paying attention to all the colors and stuff on it. I looked at it, I was like, oh, it's great for limited, for sealed, or for draft, and I saw it was a rare, and I was just like, ew. I don't even know if I would pick that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a rare... I mean, it seems fine if you have a Shinhair deck, but it's a 1-1, so it's easily going to die, and it makes 1-2s. And what I don't get about that is usually your Battle Hoppers are used for sacrifice effects more than they are for getting pumped and putting on the beats. So, 1-2, whatever. Like, it's not that much different to me. Yeah, it blocks, you know, Howling Braves. Ooh, big deal. I would prefer to see this card as an enchantment. I think that would be much better. It would be a lot more resilient. But not an enchantment, sorry, a constant. But, you know, even then, it's like, do you really want to play that, or do you want to play something that just better value, you know, better value for what it costs?
Yeah, in addition to that, the wording on the card is also a little bit unfortunate. That it says, if you create one or more Battle Hoppers instead, create that many Shinhar Militia instead. If it was a replacement effect, when you create one Battle Hopper, you create a Shinhar Militia, so we could potentially trigger multiples from itself. Like, if you have a couple of Counter Trails Recruiter, you create a Battle Hopper, you get like two or three Militias. That would be really interesting, and you can potentially do something with that. But in the way it's worded, there's no way for that to happen. So, a little bit of downside. I agree with Phoenix that if it was a constant, it may be a little bit better, but still, I mean, I still what I don't agree with Phoenix, I think it's really good on sealed or on unlimited in general. As with Concubony, making your bonnies able to attack, it's one of the things, because usually you have a lot of hopper hand generations, and you have a couple of activation, as I call them, like Booted Commander, Command Tower, or a couple of evolves. So usually having this guy could be really good. So it's another way of pumping your Battle Hoppers, so you're gonna start attacking and winning the game.
I'll take that limited deck anytime. The way that you just described it, that sounds perfect. Just doesn't happen that way. My issue with it in limited formats is, if you see this like first couple of picks period of the draft, are you really gonna take it? Or is this something that you're going to be like, I'll try and grab some shin hair along the way, and if it wheels, I'll grab it?
Yeah, it basically is usually not a pack one, pick one, for sure. But if you open it on pack two and pack three, it could be potentially really nice. But yeah, I'll probably put it, especially if there's any good uncommons, which there are a few.
Yeah, we haven't even seen all the ones in a set two others, so it may even be better commons and uncommons that we want to take over this guy. Yeah, I mean, to the effect of the boom hoppers, like you were saying, Adormi, that's probably a little too good. But we just really want to sacrifice all of our things and kill our opponent is what we're trying to get at. The whole point of this podcast is we want to just sacrifice all of our things and kill you.
Yeah, I always want to do that. I want to throw my cards to my opponent.
Literally throw them out at your opponent's face, too, not even like figuratively.
To the dome.
All right. So I got another bunny for our next one here. It's this one. I really want to be awesome, and no one Dormy's going to kill me for this one. It's Necrophage Sensei. It's a 2-cost, 1-blood threshold. It's a 0/0, so obviously it's amazing at that point. As this troop enters play, it gets permanent +1/+1 for each troop in your graveyard. To me, this card feels like it should be amazing. You play a bunch of cards you don't mind sacrificing, as well as a bunch of cards that benefit off the sacrificing, such as like Blood Cauldron Ritualist, all that kind of stuff. To me, it's not really more of a 2-drop as much as it is a 4 or 5-drop where you have a bunch of troops in your graveyard. If you want to play it like a control type deck, you can play You probably can't play it on control deck. I won't lie to you. It's not very good in a control deck. But it does have some applications. I think like a Wild Blood aggro deck with this guy, and it can be really sweet with a bunch of, again, sacrifice effects with like Roostosaurs and Blood Cauldron Ritualists, if there's some other sacrifice troops that come out in set two, as well as obviously your Darkspire Priestesses and such. I think it can be really powerful. Cards like this are always really good. It's a really good late game grab too, so I really like, I don't know, I like having cards that benefit off cards being a graveyard, so I like to sacrifice my things, I like to have all that kind of stuff going on, so I'm excited about this guy.
Okay, so to start, I really love playing with my graveyard and with those kind of effects, but the first thing you have to realize is that you really have to read the cards. This troop in this play gets permanent +1/+1 for each troop, not cards, in your graveyard, not all graveyards. Which is a pretty important distinction. Which means that if you get it early in the game, it's probably going to be a 1-1 or a, even you can even may not even be able to play it until some of your troops die. So you may be sandbagging him for a while. I do agree that this guy can be really, really good. If he has the right support to it, I don't think we on set one have the right support from it, as we only have both Crandon Ritualist, and while it still pounds with the Battle Hoppers that die, it's not. I don't see this guy being a 10-10 or whatever, super early in the game, unless there's you open like, you know, triple runs of the later, and then you manage to kill them all with a Sorrow or something like that, and play this guy afterwards. So I don't think it's going to be as big as people imagine. It's probably going to be a 3-3-4-2 in some cases, a 4-4-4-2 or a 5-5-4-2, which is fine. I think in limited it's going to be really, really good. But as in constructed, you really need a lot of support for this guy, especially because depending on what you're playing against, his effect may not be that good. For example, even if you're playing as a control deck, this guy over any other guy is probably just going to get a removal spell. This guy over Eulogist or whatever. So it's the same case. As it has no evasion, it's just going to be another big dummy. And the chance of him threatening lethal every turn, like, for example, Hive Tomb Lord does, it's just not going to happen. So,
yeah, I mean, I like him. I think he's sweet. I think he's going to be amazing and limited, just due to the sheer number of troops that get played, like low-value troops that are just, you know, fodder for blocking and stuff. And he's an uncommon, so it's not going to be that hard to find him in your drafts. And I think he's, you know, in limited, he's going to be a little bit bigger, I think. I think he's going to, you know, sit around the 4-6, you know, 4-4 to 6-6 kind of range. In constructed, I could see him most of the time probably being a 4-4 to a 5-5. He's still good. One thing that's great with a couple of cards in this guy is, was it Wretched Brood? The two drop a constant that creates a battle hopper each turn and deals you one damage. All those tokens sit in the graveyard. They all count. And that alongside Call of the Grave, like you throw it out there, they remove it, Call of the Grave, it, slam it again. He's getting pumped again. That's not too bad in my mind. You know, and if you're playing Blood Wild, you can always give him Crush, and then you're getting through, you know, a decent amount of damage. So I think, you know, he has a couple of applications to him. I think he's going to be bigger in Limited than he will be in Constructed, but I'll definitely be trying some things with him because he is one badass bunny.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that I think it's an also design, but that is one of the cards that treats better than it actually is. I do think that with the right support, it's quite good. And don't get mistaken, I think he's good. I just don't think it's amazing and bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw the card, I was jokingly saying it was Bunny Goyf. Which, obviously, yeah. It's not. I mean, it's obviously not Bunny Goyf. It's a fun name for it, though, so there's that plus for it. But, like you guys are saying, it's going to be a 4-4 or a 5-5 a lot of times in Constructed. I'm okay with that. A 2-cost 4-4 or 5-5, like, sure, sign me up. I'll take that in a heartbeat. I was excited about a 4-cost 5-5. Like, for sure, I'll take this guy. So, I mean, I don't really see a downside to it. But again, you do kind of build your deck around having him, but you also don't mind sandbagging him, right? Your opponent extinctions away your field of, like, a bunch of say, you know, say we go with our Briar Legion theme or whatever, which is a similar effect card. So the Extinction Wave, like a Briar Legion, Ritualist, and a Shroomshaw, something stupid like that. Then you play this guy, it's like a 4-4 or whatever he'd be at that point in the game, depending on what else happened earlier. And then, like, he just sits there and kind of gets his power from his graveyard friends. That seems pretty sweet to me. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm just living in Hex Christmas Land, but, you know, I mean, like Christmas Land.
I agree. He can be good with the right support. The thing is that you have to understand that he's not going to come as a 4-4, a 5-5 on turn 2, unless your deck is completely built around him and you have some insane thing you can do on the first couple of turns, which can happen, but with the support we have right now, I don't think that's really viable to build the deck around that.
Yeah, looking at set one, obviously he's not going to be that great. I think if we get some like one cost, two cost sacrifice guys, he can be really good. Like if you get like a one cost, you know, sacrifice a guy, ping a guy. Obviously, again, same theme as the whole podcast here. So we'll go with sacrifice a guy, discard a card from your hand. Or target player discard a card from the hand, something like that. That'd probably be too good anyway, but still, though.
That's way too good. way too good.
It'd be a little
remove a charge. We'll go with that. Would work.
There we go, yeah. Sacrifice a guard, remove a charge. Something like that. That's
way too bad, probably.
That's not that bad. I mean, saying get rid of, like, a Gazog counter or, like, keeping your guys alive from Zarya wouldn't be horrible to have that happening. Either way, I'm just saying a one cost sacrifice guy. We'll say you just sacrifice and nothing happens from him. I don't care. I'm saying a one cost sacrifice guy, and then playing this guy out, you could have potentially like a turn two or turn three. You could be pretty big with like your charge power. You could sacrifice, you know, charge power himself. Say if a Runchal Litter or whatever, something stupid like that. He could be pretty sweet. I'm not saying he's amazing now. I'm saying there's a potential for him to be really, really good going forward.
I agree with that, but I'm going to say something. If we get a one-cost Sacolet, that's way, way, way too good. Way too good. So that's not going to happen. A one-cost Sacrifice Olet is way too good. Way, way, way too good.
I would say a card from another game that I'd like to see them print exactly, but I'm not going to say it because I don't want to draw comparisons.
They started with the Skull.
Wait a minute, don't we have a one-drop Sacrifice Troop already?
I don't believe so.
He just converted on his two.
We just got...
Is Hop Hero
is a one?
Oh, he's technically, but you're sinking so many resources into it that he kind of doesn't... Like, he's not really what you're looking for. He could be good.
Hey, I was just trying to touch on the fact that we actually do have one.
But you have to have infinite mana to go infinite with that guy. That's a hoop I'm not willing to go through.
Manticle figure it out.
Yeah, we'll stick Manticle on this one too. Manticle's got some homework to do after this podcast, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting thing is that it seems that many of the blood troops, I don't know if it's by accident or not, probably not by accident, they are getting resistance to bones. As we have the cost fly, we have this guy, and a couple of other guys in Limited, like Roadcaster, with really, really good enters to play triggers on blood. So it seems that blood is going to be super resilient to bones. At least on Unlimited. That's one of the things
I would wonder if that's something they were trying to go for, like, as blood and Sapphire being, like, enemies. If you look at the flavor text, not the flavor text, but, like, the story behind Zurufi Doobie Boop Boop, whatever his name is, the blue dragon. He was a blood dragon and then got a bunch of sapphires and became a sapphire dragon. Maybe they're trying to do something like blood and sapphire are enemy shards, per se.
I'm going to say something. It seems that someone didn't see all the Chargia stream because they did explain, they did talk about the dragons. And what they say about the dragons is that all the dragons were originally wild and blood. And how we are going to get dragons and all the other shards is because dragon hoard the gems, and the gems being sapphire, diamond, and ruby. And the gems, when they are amassed in large quantities, they make you go a little bit crazy and influence you in their ways.
Yeah, it makes way more sense than my idea. I would love to see we saw a bit of the ruby dragon, right, by seeing the PvE card. I'm not sure if that's going to be the only dragon we get of Ruby, or if we're going to get an actual card of the Ruby dragon.
We are going to get an actual card. They did so on the challenge 3. We are going to get a dragon for each color.
Okay. I'm really I would like to see the diamond one then, because the ruby one's kind of the sapphire one rather. It's kind of underwhelming to me.
I think that the sapphire one is going to be changed.
I'd hope so, because it should still use the old card border too. So I hope they just change the entire card in general, because that just doesn't seem that great to me for the cost he has. But I would love to see what the diamond one's going to be. I'd hope it's not something stupid like gain life for each, you know, card in your hand to be kind of meh.
I mean, gaining life is a good effect, especially if something like Dragon can give the in really, really big amounts.
There was... I can't remember the name of it or if it even existed. I'm just making this up. There was, I believe, a dragon in another card game that will not be named, that whenever you cast a spell, it would then destroy everything with a cost equal to or less than that. That'd be a pretty sweet one. It'd be like a judgment every turn. Just say, I can get behind
maybe
that.
Maybe in about 10 sets or so, we can do something like that.
Judgment Dragon, I can get behind Judgment Dragon. It's all I'm
saying. I can get behind Judgment Dragon, too. I mean, just speculating, a Diamond Dragon that every time, just to go in with the same, or similar regard to Yurunath, whenever when it enters play or whenever it attacks or connects with the champion, it destroys everything with cost less than itself. That seems pretty sweet.
Does it make it like a 5 cost or something? Because there's a 7 cost, which is destroy everything every
time. Yeah, it would have to be.
Well, most
it would have to
turn.
Be a smaller body.
Well, yeah,
too.
But he
like you couldn't make it a 5/5 flyer for 5. I think that would
get
be
the
too
same
good.
As Jadim, right? 5 cost 5/5.
Meh. I will make it a 7 cost 5/5.
I mean,
Jadim
by just ends the game when you just play him and then go for master your time, or master time other 5-drop ends the game. So I mean, Jadim's fine. I mean, if this guy's a 5 cost 5/5, that's just, I guess that's probably way better. In effect, but I could definitely get behind that. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that just destroys every.
Just make
aggro
the same
code
adjustment.
Well, again, most aggro decks are sapphire based in how Hex is currently working. Also, there's still removal for it, so it's not gonna have spell shield or anything like that. So yeah, it does destroy the aggro decks if they can't handle it immediately. But I mean, odds of not handling it immediately are kind of not the highest.
I will say that the aggro decks in Hex are ruby based, but whatever.
I mean, look at Gorf. Yeah, well, against Gorfies, yeah. But I'm saying, like,
I mean, Gorfies is way better
is the
than
card,
anything
but
else.
Sapphire,
that you're
the Sapphire
into
cards
the game.
Are why the deck works. Like the Mirror Knights, the Buccaneers, the Storm Calls, the all that kind of tempo-y stuff is what really makes the deck work. And Gorfies just happens to be probably the second best card in Hex. So I mean,
just saying, Gastrol and company are still pretty good for aggro.
They're pretty good, yeah, but. I mean, I still think Buccaneer does a lot more damage and does more annoying than your typical Gastrol does.
Well, but that doesn't mean it's like the main shard for aggro. I don't think that the Sapphire is the main shard for aggro. I will say that Wild and Ruby are the focuses shard for aggro.
Well, I want to see a White Weenie deck, so hopefully we'll get some of that in set 2. I think we're actually running out of time. Try and keep this under an hour for you guys so it doesn't drag on too much. I think that was a pretty good first show. I mean, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. It's been a good time. We'll be back next week. We'll have somebody else on, and Dermy's going to step out. We'll bring in somebody else. If you guys have any recommendations or anything on topics you want us to go over, if you want to be in the show, send us an email. That's hextextv@gmail.com. We'll take a look at it. If anything sparks our interest, we'll put it on the show. And, you know, thank you to Mythic Fish Mom and Endormy. What do you guys have to say?
I had fun. yeah. So thanks for tuning in, guys. Thanks for being awesome. All that kind of jazz.
Yeah, the same as Mythic. Thanks you guys for having me here. And hopefully we are right with our predictions for set 2.
Especially the dragon. Hopefully we get that diamond dragon. That'd be awesome. I'm so pumped right now for it. Judgment dragon for president. I don't care. I want it.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for us. Thank you for tuning in to On the Draw. Check us out next week. And don't forget to go on the forums. Let us know what you think at hextex.tv. And thank you guys again. And have a good night.